Welcome. Are you ready to take a journey with me into knowledge, enlightenment, and discovery? Then let's journey again together. This is your host, Rebecca Jernigan, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Today is a very special guest. His name is Jerry E. Smith, and he's the author of a book called Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. Oh, my goodness, more about Jerry in just a moment. But first, head on over to the website, journeyswithrebecca.com. Now, there you're going to find out about my guests, along with all the latest Journeys news, and also world news you won't find in mainstream media, like the UFO abduction of the cow video posted under world news. Now, judge it for yourself. Now, here's what I think. I think it's a very good digital manifestation. That's just my opinion, okay? Now, also, scientists and economists have been offered $10,000 each by a lobby group funded by one of the world's largest oil companies to undermine a major climate change. Now, you can also see that story posted in the World News section on my homepage. Now, after listening to today's show, I'd be really excited to hear from you, so email me. Tell me what you think. And the web address for that, or the email address for that, is mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. And as a quick note, I do have a winter reading special. Please check it out, or call me 888-958-2768, or email me rebecca@journeyswithrebecca.com. Now, real quick, back to Jerry E. Smith, Weather Warfare. He also wrote a book called HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of Conspiracy. I highly recommend this book because he will be talking to us a little bit about that today. But Jerry Smith has had a long and illustrious career. He's written many, many books. One of the things, in April of 1997, the United States Secretary of Defense, William Cohen, declared that there are terrorists at work who are engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes, remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. Now, weather modification in the form of cloud seeding to increase snowpack from the Sierras. There is so much more. You guys, stay with it.
Get your personal and private reading from Rebecca. To schedule an appointment, call 1-888-95-TAROT. That's 1-888-958-2768. Find out where your life's journey will take you.
Email Rebecca with your comments to mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Welcome back, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca, and we are here with our very special guest, Jerry Smith, the author of many books. The one that we're here to talk about a lot today is called Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. And let's go ahead and welcome Jerry to the show. Hi, Jerry.
Well, hi, Rebecca. Good to be with you.
Oh, well, it's fantastic to have you be here with us. I think this information that you have in this book, as well as your previous books, is so important, especially in the time and the age that we're living in now. And if people don't understand what's going on, this is really going to help put some perspective on what's really going on in the climate, environmentally, that kind of thing. It's actually, you know, I'm one of those kind of people, Jerry, that I feel like that the more information you have, the better equipped you are to deal with your whole life process, whatever that is, your surroundings, your environment, whether it be physical, mental, spiritual, or emotional. And your book is so extraordinarily well written. As I was reading through it, you go from point A to point B, and then you fill in the blanks in between that, which is, you know, sometimes a lot of authors aren't able to do that. They just kind of give you a smattering of things, and they don't really have the in-depth knowledge that you have put together in regards to this topic, which is weather warfare. And I think what we need to do is go ahead and start out with maybe letting you tell us how this all came to be for you. You know, to write a book on this pretty testy subject, I'm sure, for many people out there.
Well, it actually began quite some time ago, back in 1990, in the early 1900s, I was working with Jim Keith, my best friend since high school, and Jim put together a circle of writers and researchers, paranoids and media watchers, and we helped Jim write his books. And one of the things I did was I helped Jim organize his thoughts and organize the material. So I'm very good at that, as you noticed.
Yes.
And coming out of that, he got me the contract to write HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy. Started work on it in 96. So I had been researching government badness, improper and illegal and covert government activity since the Vietnam War. And so about 1976 or 77, I read Gary Ellen's None Dare Call It Conspiracy. And if your listeners have not yet read None Dare Call It Conspiracy, I highly recommend it. It's one of the greatest books of the 20th century. And that got me researching conspiracies. So when I got the go-ahead on the HARP book, HARP became a springboard for me to talk about a much broader range of issues. You know, the first book on HARP was Angels Don't Play This HARP by Nick Begich and Gene Manning.
Right.
And they had done a real good job on the what, where, when, how, but it pretty much left out who and why. So my book, HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, is speculations on who and why. And I give just enough of the science to be able to understand the speculations. Well, going after that book, my publisher wanted a follow-up. And it took me another 7 years of research and 2 years of writing to come up with Weather Warfare, the military's plan to draft Mother Nature. And this book really is an examination of, going into this, I decided that there was there would be no speculation, no conspiracy theory, just the facts. And this is 400 pages of just the facts, of just what I can prove from the open scientific and military literature, which means I had to read scientific and military literature for the last 7 years to pull this stuff together.
Wow.
And the book begins with a quote, and the book is a 400-page examination of whether this quote is true or not. And the quote is from the U.S. Secretary of Defense, William S. Cohen, who in 1997 was speaking at a conference on terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, and U.S. strategy in his official position as the Secretary of Defense. So one can take this statement as an official position of the United States government. In 1997, the United States government believed, quote, others are engaging, even in an eco type of terrorism, whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. It's real, and that's the reason why we have to intensify our efforts. So I spend 400 pages trying to figure out whether he was blowing smoke or whether there really are people, there really are others who have this ability to alter the climate and set off earthquakes and volcanoes. And this is 400 pages of proof that Secretary Cohen was telling us the truth, these others include his own bad self.
Yeah.
So what I cover is the history of environmental modification from the history of environmental modification, which includes some major watershed events up to the present time. In the present time, one of the major activities going on is HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. And so as a follow-up to HARP, this book has the most up-to-date information on HARP, which includes that just recently, less than a year ago, they finished building it after 15 years and a couple of $100 million thrown at it.
Well,
after I get into HARP, I then tackle the contrail chemtrail debate and spend another 100 pages analyzing contrails and chemtrails.
Yeah, those are quite fascinating. A lot of people have actually written to me, Jerry, about that, wanting to know more about it. I've actually had just listeners that's just written in and said, what do you think about this? And a lot of the topics are the chemtrails and the contrails. Absolutely. let's talk just briefly so that people, there's a lot of people out there, believe it or not, that have never ever heard of HARP. So if you could maybe summarize what HARP is and what it's doing for everyone, kind of give them a basis, and then I'd love to get back into the contrails and the chemtrails.
Okay. HARP is a field of antennas on the ground in southeastern Alaska that are so designed as to work as one giant antenna. And today, HARP is the world's largest radio broadcasting station. But it's not designed to broadcast for human ears. It's designed to inject a fantastic amount of radio frequency energy into a spot at the top of the atmosphere. It's, the amount of energy we're talking about is 3.6 million watts, which, to give you an idea how much that is, the largest legal AM radio station in the United States is 50,000 watts.
Right.
HARP is 72,000 50,000 watt radio stations, injecting their entire output into a spot that's, according to some of the literature, about 12 miles across by about 2.5 miles deep by either 50 or 90 miles up, depending on which mode they're using. Now, what that does is that heats this is the very top of the atmosphere, heats it by several thousand degrees. When you heat it by several thousand degrees, a couple of very interesting things happen. One, the molecules of the atmosphere literally blow apart, and that they release energy when the molecules are ripped asunder. And this includes a stream of ELF, extremely low frequency radio waves, which penetrates deep into the earth and deep into the sea. And they have used this to communicate with deeply submerged submarines. In fact, this is probably the primary reason that the project actually exists. This is what the Navy was in on the project for. A curious side note is that from the beginning, it was recognized that this ionospherically generated ELF could be used to communicate with not just submarines, but also underground bunkers, and indeed could be used to locate and monitor underground facilities. And the project was originally funded by the United States Senate to verify counterproliferation treaty accords and to monitor enemy underground bases for the manufacture and launch of weapons of mass destruction. Now, even though the United States Senate said, we're not going to fund this thing unless you guys agree to do this, in the 15 years the thing has been up, they've never done it. At least, if they have done it, they've never admitted to having done it. So they either are thumbing their nose at the U.S. Congress, or they have successfully proved earth-penetrating tomography and have done so good a job at it they don't want anybody to know what they got.
Mm-hmm.
Evidence that that may be the case is that after September 11th, the HARP array was at full power for 30 consecutive days. We may have been sending messages to the submarine fleet, or we may have been using earth-penetrating tomography to map out the caves and tunnels in Tora Bora to try and find Osama bin Laden. Now, what HARP elsewise is doing, when you blow apart the molecules of the atmosphere, that turns them into a plasma, an electrically charged gas, which goes out into space and keeps going out into space until it's caught by magnetic lines of force. And then it spreads out, forming a shield of sorts. And HARP began life as a ground-based Star Wars weapon system. It was conceived of as a way to bring down incoming ICBMs. Today, it can clearly bring down passing spy satellites, and there is some evidence that it accidentally brought down the Space Shuttle Columbia.
You mentioned that in the book. That kind of freaked me out.
Yeah, HARP was running for 90 minutes prior to Columbia's reentry attempt and continued running for 90 minutes after loss of signal. Now, there's a great deal of speculation as to what was going on and why they were running it, but it's possible that indeed HARP had a finger in Columbia's pie at that point in time, and I give quite a bit of evidence for this in the book.
Right.
There's a couple of other things that the military are willing to admit to having done with it, and I put that in the book too. And the quotes from the military. So this is not speculation on my part. This is what the government says they've done, and what the government says they've done is pretty strange stuff. And my overall point about HARP is that HARP is about intentionally modifying the atmosphere. Now, since the United States became signatory to the Environmental Modification Treaty, which prohibits the use of environmental modification techniques for hostile or military purposes, the United States government has insisted that they have absolutely no interest whatsoever in controlling the weather. But what is the difference, if any, between controlling the weather and modifying the atmosphere?
Right.
If you can modify the atmosphere, if you can induce and control states in the atmosphere, you can do a large number of things with it, which includes literally reshaping the atmosphere to better guide radio waves. If you can reshape the atmosphere, there's the patents that HARP is built on expressly state ways that this technology could be used to control the weather, and yet the military and the civilians associated with this project insist that that's not what they're doing. But we know that the military engage in covert activities on a 24/7 basis.
Well, and you know, my concern was when I originally heard about HARP was about the radio frequencies that they're using, that it affects mammals and marine life. Because of the radio waves that are being emitted. And one of the thoughts was, after I was reading your book, was about how it heats up the atmosphere. I'm like, oh, well, that too is just, the stuff that's going on the Earth plane is just crazy stuff. The animals that get beached and they can't find their way back, and the migratory patterns of on land animals and stuff like that. I just have to feel, and I felt when they first announced the HARP project, that it was absolutely so detrimental to humans and animals of all people. But the other side effect was that I didn't think about was what it's doing to the atmosphere when it heats it up like that so much. It just absolutely is detrimental. It's just crazy stuff there, Jerry.
You and I hit kind of the same thing when we first heard about it. For me, it was, I had been researching mind control since the mid-1970s when I met Walter Bowart when he was in the middle of the release of the launch of his book, Operation Mind Control, which so annoyed the CIA that the CIA bought the publishing company, recalled all the books, and destroyed the books and the plates.
Uh-huh.
There's freedom of speech for you.
Oh, yeah. I'm so sure.
I've been keenly interested in mind control since the mid-70s, and when I heard that HARP was designed to bathe the world in ELF at known brain entrainment frequencies,
yes,
I went, oh my God. If HARP is exactly what they say it is, if there's no covert military operation whatsoever, but it is just some propeller heads in Alaska playing with antennas, they could inadvertently and unknowingly create mental dysfunction across huge portions of the planet.
Mm.
And if they did know what they were doing, this could truly be the ultimate weapon. And indeed, my original title for the book was HARP, The Ultimate Weapon, ?
Uh-huh.
The publisher wanted a conspiracy theory book, so we tacked Of the Conspiracy onto the title, which I've always been a little bit embarrassed about for violating Gary Owen's admonition.
Well, yeah. But at least the information is out there, and now you've set the story straight, too, as to what your feelings and your actual intent was when you published the HARP book. So for that, we commend you, honestly. Wow. I'm just, like, flooded with overwhelming feeling of sickness with all of this. It's just beyond the understanding. And, people, we just go along our daily lives, we do our little things, and then this stuff on a massive scale is going on, and it seems as if there's not as much information, or certainly not a buzz, or people communicating or talking about it like it needs to be talked about. It needs to be shared so that people are aware of what really is going on up there in Alaska.
It's very intentional. The entire aspect of this is very intentional.
I agree.
In that the military, the government, the corporations who are involved don't want us to take their toys away from them.
Oh.
So from the signing of the ENMOD treaty in the mid-70s on, we have been bombarded with the ideas that weather control is science fiction. The general public are absolutely dead convinced that humans have no intentional ability to alter the weather or climate intentionally. We can only do it unintentionally, such as through greenhouse gases, and that any idea that we could control the weather or generate earthquakes or tsunamis is pure science fiction, according to the mainstream media. Unfortunately, that is a lie. Manipulating and massaging the weather and the environment is an everyday event. Business Week magazine in 2005 reported that the Chinese government was spending $40 million a year and had 35,000 people employed full-time in weather management. And weather management here is defined as cloud seeding so as to tease more precipitation out of storms, so as to relieve droughts, suppressing hail so that hail does not fall to destroy crops, and dispersing fog from airports. These are everyday activities now, and yet the average Joe has absolutely no clue what's taking place. And even in America, we have major corporations like Weather Modification Incorporated that engage in cloud seeding and hail suppression across the western states just simply goes on literally under the radar.
And you know, when I read that, because I live in Kansas, and that was one of the states that you talked about, and I was like, you know what? I started thinking about it. I was like, there's a lot less hailstorms than what we used to have here.
Mm-hmm.
Tons less.
Right, and that's very much intentional. The air over the western Great Plains is being during the growing season is being constantly massaged by government and private interests in enhancing precipitation and suppressing hail.
That is just that is so wrong. I mean, you know, Mother Nature is Mother Nature, and us doing all these things, Jerry, and we're almost out of time on this segment, but when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. We're going to get into too the contrails and the chemtrail stuff, and going to tie all this stuff in. You guys stay with us. Oh my goodness, Weather Warfare with Jerry Smith. We'll be right back. Do you want to understand more of the nature of the universe? Why is there billions of galaxies and trillions upon trillions of star systems in our known universe? Why do we sense we are eternal beings? Why do we have different personalities? Where do our emotions and dreams emanate from? Where do the visions of deja vu come from? Your Never-Ending Life Book 1 of the Universal Learning Series introduces the philosophical theory of universal learning. The theory of universal learning focuses on you, the never-ending eternal spirit, developing and understanding the transcendent scale of the universe and the learning the ways of the Creator. Your Never-Ending Life explores such subjects as past lives, karma, emotional control, and superior spirit. For more information on this book, visit universallearningseries.com. Your Never-Ending Life, Book 1 of the Universal Learning Series is available at Barnes & Noble, Borders, and online at Amazon.com.
Fate Magazine, providing true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now. 800-728-2730 or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730 or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Have questions about your love life or your job? Get your private psychic reading from Rebecca. call to schedule an appointment at 1-888-958-2768. That number again is 1-888-958-2768.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for staying with us. We're here with Jerry Smith, Weather Warfare. We've been talking an awful lot about HAARP, but you also have some other information for us when you're talking about NMOD, and you wanted to kind of talk about the history of that, Jerry, too, as well. Kind of brings us to, you know, the other aspects of your book as well. So I'm going to kind of let you go ahead and run with that.
Okay. Well, I believe in order to understand the present, we have to understand the past to know how we got to where we are, and to know what forces are pushing us forward into the next stage. And so I try to line up what's known about the history of weather control and environmental modification, and it goes back really to the very beginning of civilization. Everybody who's ever fought a battle knows how important weather is to fighting that battle. And in intentional human modification of the environment probably can date back to the battle of the war between Rome and Carthage, when in 460 BC Rome salted the fields of Carthage so as to force the Carthaginians to either buy grain from them and so make a profit for Rome, or simply abandon their city and so stop being a problem for Rome. We see in American history some very serious events along these lines. We know that during the Indian Wars between the 1840s and 1870s, the United States government realized that that the Plains Indian culture was based on the buffalo. If the buffalo were gone, so would the Indian be. And so they hired buffalo hunters by the hundreds to go kill buffaloes by the millions. And the buffalo was almost driven to extinction, and the red man was brought to his knees. 100 years later, they decided to try the same damn thing in Vietnam. Here they realized that the jungle provided shelter and sustenance for the enemy, and if the jungle were gone, again, the enemy would be deprived of that shelter and sustenance. So they poured literally millions of gallons of defoliant, Agent Orange, Agent White, etc., over Vietnam. At the same time, they decided to use cloud seeding technology to try and extend the monsoon season so that they cloud seeded over the Ho Chi Minh Trail in hopes of turning the Viet Cong resupply route into a hopeless quagmire of mud. And this got leaked out around 1972. And when it got leaked out, Senator Claiborne Pell, Democrat, Rhode Island, subpoenaed then Secretary of Defense Melvin Laird to answer these charges. And Melvin Laird said, "Oh no, this is all nonsense. We wouldn't do any of that sort of thing. You know, cloud seeding doesn't work. And the Agent Orange is just to clear roads and pathways. It's nothing serious." Well, Laird was lying. And in fact, 2 years later, a personal letter from Laird got leaked to the press. Now, by this time, Laird had left the position of Secretary of Defense and was personal counsel to Richard Nixon, who was fighting for his political life in the aftermath of Watergate.
Right.
And so Pell couldn't subpoena him, but he did get guys from the Pentagon to troop over. And the guys from the Pentagon admitted that Operation Popeye had been ongoing for more than 8 years. Its purpose was to extend the monsoon season, that they had expended more than 41,000 units of cloud seeding over Laos, Cambodia, and North and South Vietnam in violation of international law, and they had spent $21.6 million on the project. Pell was just floored by this and wanted to know what else you guys were doing. And among the things he discovered was that the DOD was experimenting with ways to thin out the ozone layer over the over an enemy population so as to sicken the enemy with increased solar radiation exposure. This was just too much for him. And Pell led the charge to create an international treaty to prohibit the military from fooling with Mother Nature. And eventually, in 1978, that international treaty did become international law, and that treaty is the Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques, also known as the ENMOD Convention. Now, a very curious thing happened with the U.S. I mean, the U.S. Officially, the United States government was the source of this. They were the sponsors of this. They were the proud standard bearer for this. But only after they've been caught with their fingers in the cookie jar. And prior to the ENMOD treaty being signed, the United States federal government was spending upwards of $20 million a year and had more than 700 degreed scientists working on environmental modification techniques. After we sign it, the federal budget goes to zero, and all those jobs vanish. Now, they expect us to believe that Uncle Sam said, oh, I guess we can't do that anymore. and I believe that what happened is it went covert. It went black budget.
Absolutely.
And that they continued all these lines of research and stepped them up. Now, in the military acquisition cycle, the pipeline to from the time when a guy at the Pentagon says, you know, we need a gizmo that does X, to the time when a gizmo that does X is in a Marine's hand on the beach somewhere, is about 26 years. The average cycle is 26 years. Now, Pell discovered we were doing this in 72. The treaty was signed in 78. Remember, I opened the book with a quote from Defense Cohen 20 years later in 97, in which Cohen says others are engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. And I maintain he said that because he knew that, because they were in his arsenal.
Right.
And that's the right time frame. That's about 25 years from the time we were playing with it to the time he said, yeah, we got it in the arsenal now.
Right.
Now, of course, he says they've got it in the arsenal, so as the height is, you know, the CYA.
Right. So, you know, and a question is for everyone is, you know, obviously all this stuff is going on. I mean, you can see it. I mean, it's worldwide, all the stuff. Have they not, any of them, figured it out, what they're actually doing? They're destroying themselves as well as everyone else.
You know, I don't think that hits them. I think it was P.J. O'Rourke said something like giving money and power to the government is like giving booze and car keys to teenagers. We have a problem here in that these guys are really, really arrogant. And they also have the maturity of teenagers. They like to play with toys, and they are convinced it won't happen to them.
Or they've taken some kind of steps or something in order to create some kind of a safe haven for themselves. That's kind of what I figure is going on. Because they obviously have got to see what the results are of all of their weather alterations and playing and doing
my gut feeling is you're giving them too much credit.
No.
you know, look at the nuclear power industry.
Oh, yeah.
The nuclear power industry had no way when they started nuclear reactors in the 1950s.
Yes.
They had no way to deal with radioactive waste. Hadn't a clue how to deal with it. But they figured that the service life of a nuclear power plant would be about 35 years. So they figured they got 35 years to figure it out. So they figured that before they had to decommission one, they would have solved the problem. Well, it's now over 50 years later, and they still haven't solved the problem.
No, that's true. That's very true.
They were arrogant enough to go ahead with creating tons of stuff that is going to be deadly for hundreds of thousands of years.
Yes.
On the arrogant presumption that we'll get it figured out. And I think that's the same thing here. I think that they are fooling with Mother Nature in the blind, arrogant presumption that whatever they mess up, they can fix up later.
Well, they They certainly haven't done a very good job with the back end of it, in my opinion.
Oh, no, no. The military are infamous for not dealing with the back end. I mean, you look at any major military weapons research facility like Dugway or and they are huge Superfund cleanup problems.
Yes, they are. They're huge.
In Washington is an absolute screaming disaster.
Yes. Well, you know, not only is our government doing some things, but and I know we need to get into the contrails.
Oh, yes, and the Russians are even worse than us. I mean, we at least pretended to try and clean up the mess. A lot of the second and third world countries didn't even bother to do that.
Well, that's true. And you know, one of the things about Russia this year, the first year in, I think somebody said, recorded modern history, they have not had snow in January. 2007.
Right.
First year. So, gee, I wonder what's going on with that.
You know, I am a global warming skeptic. I've been looking at global warming since it was global cooling. I don't know if you remember this, but 30 years ago they were saying, "Oh, the ice age is going to happen next Wednesday."
Yeah.
And now it's we're all going to turn into a flaming sun in about 22 hours.
Right.
You can. I've followed this debate very closely. Again, I'm not a scientist, but I'm not stupid either.
Right.
And with a great deal of work and a dictionary, I can read scientific papers. the science of global warming is iffy at best. Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth is more like a convenient half truth.
Okay.
The pro global warming, the global warming alarmists leave out great hunks of data that doesn't fit their story, and we've seen this over and over with the Greens and the environmental agenda folks. And I say this with a considerable degree of because I have been an environmentalist my entire life, and the Sierra Club and I do not talk to each other. There was a case a few years ago in Klamath Falls, Oregon, where some green activists pronounced that a variety of salmon was going to go extinct if they didn't release more water into the Klamath River, which shut down all the farming in and around Klamath Falls. It later came out, it took about 2 years to be found, but it later came out that the green scientists had fudged the data. They had left out key pieces of information and had overemphasized other pieces of information so that their conclusion that the fish was going to die was nonsense. It simply wasn't true. But it did have an incredible impact on farmers and the economy of Southern Oregon.
Well, then I just have one quick question, because we're almost out of time on this segment, so that when we come back we can get into the contrails, chemtrails thing. All of this weather alterations, whether it be cloud seeding or the HAARP, all of that stuff, my question to you is then you're saying that has nothing to do on our environment, or?
Oh, no. It has a... Global warming is being used as a political tool to shove a global bureaucracy down our throats, so as to solve a problem that probably really doesn't exist or is beyond human control. But those people who are tinkering with the weather realize that as long as they keep saying, well, as long as global warming continues, the weather's going to keep getting wackier, then they can inject deliberately wacky weather and say, see, Mother Nature's out of control, when in fact Mother Nature is bound and gagged and under severe control.
Ah, okay. Well, that makes more sense. You guys, we are going to be back here with Jerry and more of Weather Warfare. Do not go away. You're not going to want to miss a thing. We'll be right back.
For 58 years, Fate has provided true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life and by others just like you who have something dramatic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on all aspects of the paranormal, angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now. 800-728-2730 or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730 or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate waits.
Prince Anthony was the handsomest man in the entire kingdom.
Ma'am, am I handsome?
His fondest wish was to find a beautiful bride.
Of course, she doesn't have to be as stunning as me.
But Prince Anthony couldn't find one. Why? Well, because he never left the palace.
Being this pretty isn't easy.
He spent all day lifting weights and getting his back waxed. And trimming and grooming and tweezing and plucking.
Perfecting perfection.
Meanwhile, his less good-looking but far more charming brother Benji found a bride. So did his rather unattractive cousins and even his flat-out butt-ugly Uncle Stanley.
I don't understand. I am way better looking than any of them.
Unfortunately, none of the women in the kingdom knew this because none of them had ever seen him.
But if they ever did.
But they didn't. So Prince Anthony spent his entire life all alone until he was old and toothless, bald and fat, saggy and rather flabby.
At least my back isn't very hairy.
You may have the best product or service in the world, but if nobody knows about it, you just have the best product or service in the world. It's called advertising, and it works. Your competitors know this. Why don't you? This message brought to you by this station, Adweek Magazine, the Radio Advertising Bureau, and the famous Radio Ranch.
Hi, this is Rebecca. You know, it's easy to keep up with all the latest Journeys news, my upcoming guests. Just sign up to receive the Journeys newsletter. It's free, and you will never receive any junk mail. Your email is never sold or distributed. So keep up to date the easy way. Just log on to my website, journeyswithrebecca.com, and at the bottom of the main page, you'll see the box. Type in your email address, and you're done. And once a week or so, you'll receive all the latest Journeys news.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
All right. You guys, we're back with Jerry Smith, Weather Warfare. And I was talking to Jerry during the break, and I started to ask him a question, and he asked me to do it on the air, so that's what we're going to do. there's a lot of off-air conversations that really probably should be on air, so that's what we're going to do here today. One of the questions, or the question that I asked you was about, I was talking about Mother Nature being cyclic in nature, and it's been recorded in history, you know, that she goes through different cycles and different periods. What is really happening then? I mean, what does all this play a part in what's going on as far as the, you know, the glaciers melting at a rapid rate and you know, we have all the underground facilities that are testing nuclear weapons underground and, you know, we have, you know, people creating tsunamis and that kind of thing. I mean, what does all this, how does this all go together?
Well, in terms of mainstream science, the big problem is meteorology, I believe, has some false premises that are preventing the meteorologists from understanding the subject they're studying, in that they seem to have this false premise that there is a norm, that regardless of the individual year highs and lows, there is a median, there is a norm that it balances around. And I believe that's a false premise, that the norm is itself the highs and lows balancing around an abnorm, that the cyclical nature is far more the driving force than meteorology is willing to recognize. In the we see part of this in the global warming debate, in that the alarmists are leaving out big pieces of the cycle because they don't fit their story. There was the medieval warming. There was a period between 1000 and 1250 AD where temperatures spiked and got much warmer than they are today. And then there was the little ice age between the 15th and 18th centuries. The temperature dropped and got much colder than it is today. Now, where we are right now is we are actually about midway between as cold as it got during the little ice age and as hot as it got during the medieval warming. So the normal is we are on average. It's just average is different from what we're used to because we have been coming out of the little ice age for the last 150 years. And so it's expected we will continue to warm for a while until something happens, and we don't know what the something is. We don't know what the triggers are. We now know that the last ice age ended about 12,000 years ago, suddenly, abruptly. In less than 20 years, the temperature spiked by something like 7 degrees or 11 degrees, and the ice age ended and melted in vast puddles, puddles the size of states, in a 20-year period. And we don't have a clue what causes these abrupt, outrageous changes. There are a lot of people working on it, and you know, another 20 years we might figure it out. But the global warming debate is a politically motivated debate that intentionally masks this information, and mainstream science hasn't come to grips with its own failures yet. And until meteorology can pull its head out of its backside and realize that the Earth has a lot more cycles than they're willing to recognize, we're never going to get a forecast that's going to be accurate.
Well, and you know what, as I'm sitting here listening to you, that just makes absolute sense. I mean, what we're basing it on is a term that I heard just the other day, modern history, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is modern recorded history, which is the news that I got from, you know, Russia is the first year in modern recorded history that they haven't had snow on the ground in January.
Right, and during the medieval warm, there was about 250 years there where they probably never had snow on the ground in Moscow in January. But the problem is that the thermometer was only invented 150 years ago. So we have to infer what ancient temperatures were. And we infer these through a number of things, tree rings and lake sediments and ice cores. And the science on exactly how to read these things hasn't been absolutely wrapped up and tied in a big pink bow yet.
No, and I agree, and I've always said that science, you know, people say science is an absolute, and I say, oh, we have just no clue as to what's really going on many different levels in anything. I mean, we're just not there. Science is not an absolute. It's open to theories and interjections and ideas, and it's just all about how somebody processes something, and it becomes scientific evidence and doesn't necessarily make it truth. And scientists across the board, most of them, are pretty steadfast in their sciences that they study. Meteorology is one of those. And I say it all the time. I said, you know, it'd be wonderful to be a weatherman on TV and get paid all that money to not know what you're doing. I mean, I've said that for years. It's like, just step outside, check it out. You know, go with your instincts, whatever. So, you know, you put a really good spin on that. I appreciate that, Jerry. That was really good. I just never even thought about that in the context in which you put it. So,
right.
But you're right. It is a
good
political
thing. Example of this is January last year, January 06,
uh-huh.
we had the January thaw. Mm-hmm. It was the warmest January on record in North America. Of course, the records only go back up, 180 years.
Right.
Or 130 years. Part of the problem is that why nobody predicted it is because the January thaw happens every 8 years. It's a cycle that you have to see the raw data to see. And in meteorology, they average the data.
They average out
their information. And so, on average, it doesn't happen. but
cyclic, it does.
Yes,
there
and it
go.
Happens every 8 years because... And nobody knows exactly what the driving phenomena is, but we know what the marker is. And the marker is that the planet Venus comes between the Earth and the Sun in what is called a conjunction. And
right.
And it happens several times a year, once or twice. I forget how many times it happens. But once every 8 years, the Venus comes between Earth and Sun around the winter solstice. And when the winter solstice and the Venus conjunction line up, we get the January thaw, and it happens every 8 years. And
so
it's been happening every 8 years throughout human history. And yet meteorology doesn't know anything about it.
No, they don't trust the astrological aspect of it. Has been kind of poo-pooed away, and I've always thought that it was tremendous because it affects so many things astrologically, with the planets moving. It changes energies, it has influctuations, that kind of thing. Before we run out of time, though, because you have got so much information in this book that I think needs to be in the hands of anybody who is interested in this topic, please let us know how to get a hold of you, how to get a hold of your book, your website, and that kind of stuff, Jerry.
Okay, my website is jerryesmith.com, jerryesmith.com. At jerryesmith.com, there's a lot of information on this book and my other books. There's a lot of information on me, my co-authors, friends, associates, and yada yada. My publishing company, where I live, and so on and so forth. So drop into jerryesmith.com and learn all you need. If you want the book right this minute, dial 1-800-718-4514. That's 1-800-718-4514. Or go to jerryesmith.com or go to adventuresunlimitedpress.com. And from any one of those three sources, I will give you an autographed copy.
Yay! Jerry, thank you so much. And we're going to be having you back on in the next few months here. And we're going to open up phone lines and take calls. You guys don't go away. We'll be right back. Do you want to understand more of the nature of the universe? Why is there billions of galaxies and trillions upon trillions of star systems in our known universe? Why do we sense we are eternal beings? Why do we have different personalities? Where do our emotions and dreams emanate from? Where do the visions of deja vu come from? Your Never-Ending Life Book 1 of the Universal Learning Series introduces the philosophical theory of universal learning. The theory of universal learning focuses on you, the never-ending eternal spirit, developing an understanding of the transcendent scale of the universe and the learning the ways of the Creator. Your Never-Ending Life explores such subjects as past lives, karma, emotional control, and superior spirit. For more information on this book, visit universallearningseries.com. Your Never-Ending Life, Book 1 of the Universal Learning Series is available at Barnes & Noble, Borders, and online at Amazon.com.
Don't forget to visit Rebecca's website for all the latest Journeys news, guest information, audio archives, and more. Log on to JourneysWithRebecca.com.
Journeys is always looking for informed, entertaining, and passionate guests. Email your guest suggestion to mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca. What a wonderful show. I do hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder to check out my website. That's journeyswithrebecca.com. And please email me. Tell me what you thought of today's show. That address is mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. And a special thanks to the sponsors of Journeys. Fate Magazine. Since 1948, Fate is the longest-running publication of its time. You can find out more at FateMag.com. Also, Your Never-Ending Life, Book 1 of the Universal Learning Series by Sandy Andrews. To find out more, go to UniversalLearningSeries.com. Thank you so much for listening, and see you next time. Blessings to you all, and goodbye for now.